minute here.
Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramar Takefio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
So here we are. I'm Rosanna Martefio, and this is Gather Round. Do you hear the fire in the background?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Yeah, so we're gathering around the fire. Tonight, Dorit Jacobson is hosting with me, and right now we've got... Yeah, hi. And now you and Raymond Blaine on Palestine, have just met right before the show. So good to have you both here. Two of my favorite Palestinian activists. And then we have Robbie Martin coming on later from Dublin. So it should be a good show. And Blaine has been getting known for reading letters from Palestinian children. And tonight he's still reading letters.
Yes.
You want to talk to us on this show about
sure.
Rachel Corrie? What's up, Blaine?
Okay, so this show is basically dedicated to Rachel Corrie and the 10-year anniversary of her death by bulldozer from the Israeli military when she was trying to protect a physician's home in the Rafah area of Gaza near the Egyptian border. She died way too young, for sure. And I have some emails here that she wrote when she was in Palestine and talking about the things that she saw and describing what she was thinking. And I thought that these would be quite good for the listeners to hear. And I also want to say that most of the stuff that I'm going to be reading is still going on to this day. And these were written on February 7th of 2003.
So these were written just a little over a month before she was murdered.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, so she's there. If you guys go online, you can go to the Rachel Corrie Foundation. I would suggest you all donate some cash to them. Her parents run the organization, and they've incurred a lot of cost from flying back and forth to Israel trying to get justice for her.
Right. Somebody was trying to tell me that they were making a ton of money on this. And, you know, this was somebody, it was an Israeli in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
I said, have you lost your mind? You know, in the first place, they asked the Israeli government for a dollar.
Right. They sued for $1, yeah.
Yeah.
It's not about money.
No, it's not. I can honestly say I know them. I know Cindy. I know Craig. I've met them many times. They live in Olympia. They live a pretty simple life. But they've dedicated their life to help Palestinians all over, not just in Gaza, but in the West Bank and also in the diaspora, the different people that have been displaced over the last 40, 50 years, what have you. So, yeah, they're not in it for the money at all, and they're not getting rich from it. So if anybody has any questions with that, you can get a hold of me on Facebook. But, they are doing everything they can. They're going to have some things going on this weekend in Olympia, actually, too, and so I'll probably make it out there for dinner and that kind of thing and meet up with them.
Yeah, we want to say that's Olympia, Washington in the U.S. on the West Coast.
That is correct. Yeah, Olympia, Washington, correct. So anyway, well, if you want, I can start with reading the first part of this email and then we can kind of discuss it.
Yeah.
It's basically like a three-part email, so we can kind of go through it if you guys would like.
Okay.
And anytime, I'm sorry, I didn't get your other guest name, but...
Sarit.
Sarit.
Oh, okay, wonderful. You can chime in anytime.
I'm sure you've seen her on Facebook, but you guys can become friends after this, yeah.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, so February 7th, 2003, this is Emails from Palestine. This is off the Rachel Corrie Foundation's actual website. She also has a book out that was all of Rachel Corrie's writings, poems, and that kinds of things, and this is where these come from. So you can also purchase the book, and that also helps the Rachel Corrie Foundation for Peace and Justice. Okay, so it says, hi, family and friends and others. I've been in Palestine for 2 weeks and 1 hour now, and I still have very few words to describe what I see. It is most difficult for me to think about what's going on here when I sit down to write back to the United States, something about the virtual portal into luxury. I don't know if many of the children here have ever existed without tank shell holes in their walls and the towers of an occupying army surveying them constantly from near horizons. I think, although I'm not entirely sure, that even the smallest of these children understand that life is not like this everywhere. An 8-year-old was shot and killed by an Israeli tank 2 days before I got here, and many of the children murmur his name to me, Ali, or point to the posters of him on the walls. The children also love to get me to practice my limited Arabic by asking me, Kaif Sharon, Kaif Bush, and they laugh when I say, Bush Majun, Sharon Majun, back in my limited Arabic. Here is Sharon. How is Bush? Bush is crazy. Sharon is crazy, is what the interpretation of that is. Of course, this isn't quite what I believe, and some of the adults who have the English correct me. Bush, Mish Majun. Bush is a businessman. Today, I tried to learn to say Bush is a tool, but I don't think it translated quite right. But anyway, there are 8-year-olds here much more aware of the workings of the global power structure than I was just a few years ago. That was the first part of it.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, that the 8-year-olds would be, and that makes sense, though, because they live it.
Yeah, 8-year-olds that know more about global power structure than adults here in the United States. That's kind of sickening, actually.
Well, yeah, it's very sickening.
Yeah, they shouldn't have to know that.
No.
No. And the American people should be a little more up on what's going on, because I don't think this stuff would happen if more people knew. And that's why we're here today.
It is.
Yeah. So then the rest, the next part of it, she writes, nevertheless, no amount of reading, attend conferences, documentary viewing, and word of mouth has prepared me for the reality of the situation here. You just can't imagine it unless you've seen it. And even then, you're always well aware that your experience of it is not all at all the reality. What with the difficulties the Israeli army face, if they shot an unarmed U.S. citizen, and with the fact that I have money to buy water when the army destroys wells, and the fact, of course, that I have the option of leaving. Nobody in my family has been shot driving in their car by a rocket launcher from a tower at the end of a major street in my hometown. I have a home. I'm allowed to go see the ocean. Ostensibly, it's still quite difficult for me to be held for months or years on end without trial. This is because I am a white U.S. citizen, as opposed to so many others. When I leave for school or work, I can be relatively certain that there will not be a heavily armed soldier waiting halfway between Mud Bay and downtown Olympia, Washington, at a checkpoint with the power to decide whether I can go about my business and whether I can go get home again when I am done. So if I feel outraged at arriving and entering briefly and incompletely into the world in which these children exist, I wonder conversely about how it would be for me or for them to arrive in my world. So I've already had that experience with Hiba, who was 4 when she got here. Her birthday was yesterday, actually. I think she turned 6. And she was, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, but didn't know any English. So, and then was kind of stuck here because her father got sick. Well, now she's speaking very good English. She's been going to school now for almost 2 years. And so her life has changed immensely. So I kind of know what it's like for them to arrive in this world called the United States and just look around and be so overwhelmed. The same with his mom, you know, teaching them to ride buses and getting them to English-speaking classes. And I took Heather
like
to school on her first day and stuff. So I know a lot about that firsthand.
Yeah, well, because you were talking about Cindy and Craig Corey and them helping people come over here. I mean, you've done a lot of that, Blaine, yourself.
I'm with a lot of working with a lot of the different organizations, and I really don't necessarily help them get here. But once they do get here, greet them and make sure that they're okay, like I did with Hakeem. And then he's had some people come in and go back out, but I got to meet a few of those people too, which has been nice.
Well, you're the welcome wagon, right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I always, you know, I talk to them on Facebook over there, and then when they get here, then we meet usually, and so that's always kind of neat too.
Yeah.
So.
Well, now when Rachel Corey was writing these emails and things, when she was there, she was with an organization. Right.
Yeah, she was with the ISM, which is International Solidarity Movement.
Right.
Yeah. And she writes a little bit about that in one of her emails here. It's kind of cool that I think it was sent to her dad. Yeah, sent to her dad. So then there's a, it goes on to say, they know that children in the United States don't usually have their parents shot, and they know they sometimes get to see the ocean. But once you've seen the ocean and lived in a silent place where water is taken for granted and not stolen in the night by bulldozers, and once you spend an evening when you haven't wondered if the walls of your home might suddenly fall inward, waking you from your sleep, and once you've met people who have never lost anyone, once you've experienced the reality of the world that isn't surrounded by murderous towers, tanks, armed settlements, and now a giant metal wall, I wonder if you can forgive the world for all the years of your childhood spent existing, just existing, in resistance to the constant stranglehold of the world's fourth largest military, backed by the world's only superpower. In its attempt to erase you from your home, there's something I wonder about these children. I wonder what would happen if they really knew. As an afterthought to all this rambling, I'm in Rafah, city of 140,000 people, approximately 60% of whom are refugees, many of whom have been refugees twice, three times refugees. Rafah existed prior to 1948, but most of the people here are themselves or descendants of people who have been displaced from historic Palestine, which is now Israel.
Wow.
Not in our lingo, it's not Israel, but anyway.
I wish they taught that in Israeli schools.
Yeah, it's starting to pick up some speed, but it's still not where it needs to be.
I grew up in Israel, so we were never taught anything about Palestine, but I always could feel something was wrong.
Well, thank you for stepping up and speaking out, because I feel that the only way this is going to change...
They are us. We are them.
Yeah, is if it changes from inside. I can't change it. The United States can't change it. The only people that can change it are Israelis. And that's...
Don't say that. Their media is misleading them right now and saying that in the Israeli media, they're saying that Hamas wants to kill all the Jews in the world. So they're trying to turn them into Hitler, and it makes them really crazy. It's hard to talk
it sure
to them
does.
Right now.
Yeah.
It's scary when you believe that. I talked to a friend in Jerusalem. I mean, he's sort of my engaging point, whatever. And he really doesn't. I mean, part of him knows that there's people being killed, but the other part of him, he really thinks that the Palestinians, like in the West Bank, that work in Israel. And go through the checkpoints and all. I mean, he thinks that, you know, they're pretty happy with their life. And so,
some people do think that.
Yeah, he's so delusioned.
It's not a life, it's more of an existence.
I know why. Exactly. It's a survival mode.
Yeah.
They're just going through the motions. They're in so much pain.
Yeah.
Well, it has to be because, I mean, if you were to meet him, and we talk on the phone and stuff, he's at heart, he's a good man. His kids, his grandkids, they love him. The dog loves him. But he is just this part of the brain has been deadened, desensitized.
Yeah, that's brainwashed.
By the media, which he watches, and so he really doesn't think. You know, I mean, and he thinks that it'll end sometime. Actually, he thinks it'll end with an Armageddon kind of thing. And then everybody will be happy again. But he really doesn't see how he's been lied to, because he thinks that there's money, and he just doesn't believe when I talk about orchards and things being burned.
Mm-hmm.
It's because the IDF has Hezbollah. Their propaganda is the best
really good
propaganda in the world. When I watch it, even I'm always amazed.
Sometimes I watch it,
and it almost... I almost believe it, you know. It's so...
Well, I want to say, though, the Israelis are very, very good at it. Very good at it. And if the Palestinians could even get even close to being that good at it, it would change things on the ground. But it's very difficult to change the narrative.
You have to be evil to be such a liar, though.
Yeah, I agree.
They're really good people, you know, what they deal with every day.
Mm-hmm.
Shows how nonviolent they actually are.
The Israeli activists and the Palestinians who are there, and
we're very tight.
I mean, just trying to march, and you know, having rubber bullets and tear gas and everything.
Some kid got killed by a dum-dum bullet, which those are illegal under international law. That's a bullet that breaks into many fragments, and I don't know how somebody can just miss that and not say something.
Well, you know, well, international law doesn't apply to Israel. It didn't apply when the Mavi Memoir was
No, it does not apply.
And people no. murdered on it. No, mm-hmm. international law doesn't apply to Israel.
Right, right.
Matter.
So
what's
she
happening
goes on.
In Israel? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Sorry.
No, go ahead.
The best soldiers in Israel right now are in jail, and the bad ones are the ones who are running everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's
so,
that's what Yonatan Shapira says.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I did get there's also a letter here from a soldier. It was dated the same day as she wrote her email, and he writes, and this is a really good letter. This is from an actual IDF soldier named Danny. And he says, I'm a reserve first sergeant in the IDF. The military orisons are filling up with conscientious objectors. Many of them are reservists with families. These are men who have proven their courage under fire in the past. Some have been in jail for more than 6 months with no end in sight. The amount of AWOLs and refusals to serve are unprecedented in our history as a nation, as well as our refusals to carry out orders that involve firing on targets where civilians may be harmed. In a time now in Israel where jobs are scarce and people are losing their homes and businesses, to Sharon's vendetta, many career soldiers, among them pilots and intelligence personnel, have chosen jail and unemployment over what they could only describe as murder. I'm supposed to report to the military justice department. It's my job to hunt down runaway soldiers and bring them in. I've not reported in for 18 months. Instead, I've been using my talents and credentials to document on film and see with my own eyes what the ISMers and other internationals have claimed my boys have been up to. I love my country. I believe that Israel is under the leadership of some very bad people right now. I believe that settlers and local police are in collusion with each other and that the border police are acting disgracefully. They are an embarrassment to 40% of the Israeli public, and they would be an embarrassment to 90% of the population if they knew what we know. Please document as much as you can.
I think they've always been that bad.
Yeah. Please document as much as you can and do not embellish anything with creative writing. The media here serves as a very convincing spin control agent through all of this. Pass on this letter to your friends. There are many soldiers among the ranks of those serving in the occupied territories that are sickened by what they see. There is a code of honor in the IDF. It's called Tohar Hanashek, and I may have said that wrong. It's a way to say to a comrade who is about to do something awful, like kill an unarmed prisoner or carry out an order that violates decency. It means literally the purity of arms. Another phrase that speaks to a soldier in his own language is Degal Shahur, which means black flag. If you say Ata Machat Deklar Shahur, it means you are carrying out immoral orders. It's a big deal and a shock to hear it from the lips of a silly, misguided foreigner. At all times possible, try to engage the soldiers in conversation. Do not make the mistake of objectifying them as they have objectified you. Respect is catching as is disrespect, whether either be deserved or not. You're doing a good thing. I thank you for it. Peace. Danny. That was from a soldier in the IDF. So, I think it's...
But like you said, that was 10 years ago.
Yeah. So they were there then, and they're still there now, and I think it's gaining some ground, I'm hoping. I mean, I don't know a ton about really Israeli politics and the people on the ground, so maybe you can talk more about that, because I don't know as much about
it. I talked with some of the activists, and things are happening, aren't they?
Yes.
I mean,
that's good.
They're gaining ground.
They're starting to realize that this can't go on, that this isn't sustainable. But then there's the other side of them that say, well, we want to split this up before it's too late because we want to have a Jewish-only state, which is still racist in its own way. So they want a two-state solution so they can still kick out all the Arabs. It doesn't make any sense.
That's the idea, yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any kind of logistical sense either.
That movie, The Gatekeepers, came out was kind of along that line.
I blame the corporate media.
Yes, absolutely.
For keeping people totally out of touch with reality. So how can they deal with reality if they don't know what it is?
Well,
yeah, so true. So true.
That's right.
They need good media, and maybe computers will fix that.
Well, it's already fixed it a lot. I mean, I've heard a lot more people. And I mean, even people here that I work with ask me what I'm doing, because I was reading the emails and going over my stuff today, and people are asking me what I was doing. And I said, oh, here, just read it yourself. And they looked at me like, what? I said, yeah, that was 10 years ago, and it's twice as bad now.
Right, but they didn't know. And, I mean, I have to admit that I did not know. I don't know if it was just me, probably. Well, it wasn't just me, but I didn't know when she was murdered. And I think a lot of people didn't.
Well, the reason I knew is because I've been following this stuff since the 80s. And I'll be honest with you, I was ready to get my $2,000 ready and go and join the ISM. But then she was murdered like that, and it scared me. I said, I can't go there. I'm an American. They'll kill anybody.
It shocked me when it happened, too.
Right. And this was long before Facebook and any of that, where I actually even knew anybody that lived in Palestine. I didn't even know a Palestinian. I just knew it was wrong.
Right.
And I was asked by Sobe, who came here from Canyones, I think he was from Canyones. But anyway, he came here for medical treatment, and in a hospital bed, he sat there and he looked at me and he said, why do you care? He just point blank, why do you care? I said, because it's so wrong. And he just smiled. But the sad thing is that these kids are growing up with massive hate in their hearts. They are really angry, and I don't blame them one bit.
Well,
I don't know how.
You can't blame them.
No. So not only is peace very difficult to achieve, but then how do we change the mindset? You know, that it's going to take generations to get through that, and they better get started now or it's just going to get worse.
They've always been really nice to me when I used to live there.
Yeah, the Palestinians are the nicest people on the planet.
Oh my God, they were so nice. I would make
friends with them. They're the nicest Arabs in the whole world. I mean, I've met them from all over the world, and they are by far the best educated, the most knowledgeable, and also the friendliest people. And so
they're really friendly.
Yeah. You see them. I think that story went round about the little boy who was killed by, you know, some of the Israeli bombing, and he had some coins on him, and somebody said, wow, that's a lot for him, you know, why did he have so much money? And it turned out he'd been collecting or saving money for for the kids in, I think, Somalia, wasn't it? I mean, who needed food. He was, and there he is.
I remember that.
And, yeah, I mean, that was just, talk about a heartbreaker. And, and Israel, with the help of the U.S., killed him. And, you know, even in his conditions, I mean, he was trying to save money for kids to feed other kids. I mean, it was...
Thanks one to no one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that's what they feel, too. It's like, well, you know, just because it's happening to us, it shouldn't happen to anybody. So if we can help at all, you're going to do it.
Right.
So that's
a whole other... an outlook. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So in this other letter, this is kind of what happened to her, and it's kind of strange that she talks about it. It says, currently the Israeli army is building a 14-meter-high wall between Rafah and Palestine and the border, carving a no-man's land from the houses along the border. 602 homes have been completely bulldozed, according to the Rafah Popular Refugee Committee. The number of homes that have been partially destroyed is greater. Today, as I walked on top of the rubble where homes once stood, Egyptian soldiers called to me from the other side of the border, go, go, because a tank was coming, and then waving, and what's your name? Something disturbing about this friendly curiosity reminded me of how much, to some degree, we're all kids, curious about other kids. Egyptian kids shouting at strange women wandering into the path of tanks, Palestinian kids shot from tanks when they peek out from behind walls to see what's going on, international kids standing in front of tanks with banners, Israeli kids and in the tanks, anonymously, occasionally shouting, also occasionally waving. Many forced to be here, many just aggressive, shooting into the houses as they wander away. So,
that's unreal. I mean, that's something surreal.
She's been roaming around those areas for a while, you know.
Yeah.
And it's strange that she was so close to the border that the Egyptian soldiers could actually see her and yell at her. That's how close that they are to Egypt, but can't get out.
Yeah.
You know, they're within shouting distance, and they still can't leave. So it's pretty sad.
Shows how corrupt Egypt is.
And Egypt is just bought by the United States. Egypt is an arm of the United States. The Muslim Brotherhood was put into place, and nothing changed because they're not going to screw up their money.
No.
And Hamas, I bet, was put by Israel. really serves all the Israeli needs.
Yeah, that's exactly
right. It's not a coincidence.
No, it's not a coincidence at all. This is all very calculated and very evil. And it was not, none of this stuff was by accident. They did a very good job of dividing, not only dividing the people from Israel, but also dividing their own, dividing the Arabs between each other.
Right.
And now
I mean,
you have a lot of
stuff. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And they love seeing Egypt being in turmoil, too, because then they're no threat.
Right.
You know, so, you know, if the money stopped tomorrow, I think that Egypt would have a different line on Israel.
Well, right. Well, the Egyptian people, there again, they do.
Yeah, the Egyptian people are not the Egyptian government by far.
No, exactly.
Not at all.
And that's what, you know, people around the world realize these things because, you know, I'm apologizing for what the government here does so often. And people say, no, 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 we know it's not you guys. We know it's not the people. We know it's your government. And it's the government. They're not my government, but it's the government,
Yeah. So I can't imagine living like this, but this is talking about Rafah again. It says, in addition to the constant presence of tanks along the border and in the western regions between Rafah and the settlements along the coast, there are more IDF towers here than I can count along the horizon at the end of the streets. Some just army green metal, others these strange spiral staircases draped in some kind of netting to make the activity within anonymous. Some hidden just beneath the horizon of buildings. A new one went up the other day in the time it took us to do laundry and to cross town twice to hang banners. Despite the fact that some of the areas nearest the border are the original Rafah with families who have lived in this land for at least a century, only the 1948 camps in the center of the city are Palestinian-controlled areas under Oslo. But as far as I can tell, there are few, if any, places that are not within the sights of some tower or another. Certainly, there is no place invulnerable to Apache helicopters or to the cameras of invisible drones we hear buzzing over the city for hours at a time. So it's...
There's no... Well, it's hard to imagine, but she did find the words and she wrote it back. So we have that. I know that, you know, people aren't going to forget her because she made such an impression. And shortly we've got an interview with Robbie who talks about how it impressed him when he found out. She's been made a big impression on a lot of people.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad she did all these writings and that they published them.
Yeah, right.
So it's really a look
so
into
that
the
lives on
situation.
Too in her memory. But thank you, Blaine, so much.
You're very
and
welcome.
We'll see you next time with Letters from the Kids again.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Look forward to doing that. Great. And have more letters from my friends in Palestine. And you all
you
both
go.
Have a very nice evening.
Thank you. Thanks for taking time from your lunch. Yeah.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. Well, you know, we were just listening to the writings right before she died, but we've made people have heard about the fifth grade speech, and I know Robbie's going to probably mention that, but... Sarit, I want to play that because I know when I first heard it, I didn't know who she was. And just the fact that this was a fifth grader blew me away.
Amazing. I'm here for other children. I'm here because I care. I'm here because children everywhere are suffering and because 40,000 people die each day from hunger. I'm here because those people are mostly children. We have got to understand that the poor are all around us and we're ignoring them. We have got to understand that these deaths are preventable. We have got to understand that people in third world countries think and care and smile and cry just like us. We have got to understand that they are us. We are them. My dream is to stop hunger by the year 2000. My dream is to give the poor a chance. My dream is to save the 40,000 people who die each day. My dream can and will come true. If we all look into the future and see the light that shines there.
That just, you know, when you think that this was written by, and she may have had some help, but I mean, what would she be, 10 or 11 to be in the fifth grade?
Yeah, 10.
Something like that.
I think so.
Yeah, I saw that, and on the internet, and I thought, wow. What great parents she must have. And then I find out, you know, from people like Blaine just mentioned and then our friend Tommy who've met them that they are really wonderful people. And you get that when you see interviews with them.
Yes.
You see where she got her training and the compassion and everything. But I don't know.
Right,
do you want to tell us what you do with that, or is that a little secret of yours, what you do with her speech? Because I know you are a very big fan of hers.
Oh, yeah. I'm,
I know you
exactly
posted some places just to remind people.
Yes, I like to share it, and especially in Israeli groups, without even saying who she is or what she is. You know, get them emotionally involved,
yeah.
And then share the rest of the information. And it led to some success.
I bet it has, because, I mean, everybody can relate to seeing this cute little girl with her speech, and then when you come
yes.
in later and let them know who they just listened to.
There were a few skeptics, but a lot of good successes,
mm-hmm.
especially with young girls.
Yeah.
Had a lot of young girls report they couldn't stop crying.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, that's good. Tears are not bad, because heaven knows we cry enough. But that's like the
that's
first.
It's amazing they never heard of her until now.
Yeah. Well, it's not taught. I think a lot of things aren't. Well, just like in this country, it's not taught either. So why would we expect it to be taught there?
Yeah, here people would know either on the Occupy movement here. I noticed everyone did know who she was.
Yeah.
Very amazed. Politically active people here are waking up really good.
Yeah. Well, you know, I didn't know till a few months ago, because I met a cousin of mine and I was mentioning Occupy, and he didn't know what I was talking about. And he watches mainstream media.
Yeah, they're hiding it. And they, whenever she did pass away, Rachel, they were talking about Stacey Peterson all the time.
Yeah, okay,
remember?
See? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, why? What are they trying to hide? They're talking about one person all day.
Yeah, so that's it. That's why. Now, we all live here. You are originally from Israel, but you're living in the States, and I'm from here, and Blaine is here. But we did have, now because of the time difference, this has been pre-recorded. It may be a little rough because we've had communication problems, but Robbie Martin from Dublin did an interview with me the other day, and we all know the Irish are really, really, really big supporters of Palestine.
Yes.
I mean, it's wonderful, and he's told me before, well, you know, his country's been occupied, he knows what it's like. And so I just like to start this interview. It's in two parts. So this is from Robbie.
Robbie Martin from Dublin is with us tonight. Hi, Robbie.
Hello, Ruthann. How are you?
Oh, I'm wonderful. And as you know, we're doing the special Rachel Corrie show tonight. And I wanted you on because I know that her death had a major impact on your life. You are such a pro-Palestinian supporter. And I'd just like to ask, when did you first hear and how did you hear about Rachel Corrie?
Okay, well, I first started using some computers in 2010, January 2010. I'd never used computers before then. But I did have an understanding of the Palestinian conflict because of the media here in Ireland. We used to get a lot of information in the 80s about the conflict.
Okay.
I did have a solid understanding of the conflict. So I was finding my way through the internet and joining up with Facebook. I had liked a page called the Irish Anti-War Movement page. And on March the 16th of 2010, the whole page was dedicated to this girl that I'd never heard of before, called Rachel Corrie. And the whole story started with the video of her giving her fifth grade speech as a young school kid. And I watched that and I thought, oh, well, that's a nice young child being brought up. by a good family, obviously, because of our commitment, our willingness to want to help people who are less fortunate than ourselves. And then the page then went to videos of Rachel Curry in Gaza, and her telling of her experiences there, and what she thought of the situation and how it should be changed. And then the story went to what happened to her on that fateful day in March 16th in 2003.
Oh.
When she had got a call from a friend of hers who was a doctor, and he was on the phone to her in a panic saying that they're coming to demolish my house. And she contacted the rest of the International Solidarity Movement members, and they went to the house to try and prevent the demolition. And it's important to state that the house that the Israelis wanted to demolish was in the middle of a housing complex. It wasn't on the outskirts of a complex. So they wanted to demolish this one house. Why is the big question. They're on this particular house instead of the houses on the outskirts. Their excuses are always about their security. So how would one little house in the middle of a lot of houses be a threat to their security? So Rachel was standing in front of the bulldozer, and the videos are all online. You can see the photographs as well. There's absolutely no way that soldier driving that bulldozer not see Rachel Curry. She was wearing an orange luminous vest, which is very, very easy to see. And you can see from the pictures as well that his eye line, he can definitely see Rachel Curry's
family. Exactly. You can tell that she was his line. Yes.
So the bulldozer then just started moving forward, and she was on a mound of dirt. And she fell over as he was pushing that dirt and fell over on her back. He kept going, drove over her all the way, reversed back over her again a second time. And there are photographs, which one can see on the internet as well, of this particular soldier driving the caterpillar bulldozer, clenching a fist as if in victory after he'd crushed her. And when I'd seen that really, really had an effect on me. That tears started to well up in the eyes. And I immediately went back to the very first video of the clip of her giving a fifth grade speech, and the tears did start flowing down, because you do see then the beautiful child had grown into a beautiful woman, and she was only interested in helping dolls less fortunate than herself. And because of her desire to help others, she was, I'm going to say murdered, because I don't skate around these issues. It's plain and simple. She was murdered.
She was murdered.
It wasn't an accident. She was driven over deliberately. And this is what Zionist Israel is about. They want to have their Jewish state, and nothing is going to stop them. They don't care who they kill.
Yeah.
American citizens, any citizens of anywhere, they kill children. They have no problem killing anyone if they're there to try and stop them from doing what they want to do, which is eventually create a greater Israel, which is going to take in a lot more land than just Palestine. I'm not going to stop at the if they take all of Palestine. They're going to continue with a land grab all through the Middle East.
Exactly. That is their plan. And you're right. They don't care who's killed or injured, tortured. They've got so many children. Palestinian children are in the jails. But you mentioned the animals. Sure. They just like they do the orchards. When the squatters come in, they just wipe away everything.
Well, today there's another 100 trees that are being taken down in a village near Nablus by the squatters.
Hmm.
And, of course, every time they go in and do these things, you have the Israeli army or police with them, protecting the squatters from being stopped by the Palestinians whose trees are cutting down.
Right. They're protecting squatters from people who are trying to protect their own homes and each other. Yeah.
And livelihoods, because them orchards are their livelihoods. That's how they survive. That's how they put food on the table, put clothes on their children's backs, and send their children to school.
Yeah. It's, so much is happening there that just it brings to tears. But you started talking about Rachel Corrie's speech when she was, in the fifth grade. That's amazing, because my first thought was like yours, wow, what a great parent she must have to, have raised this child. And I didn't know when I first saw that speech, I didn't know, and who she was or what happened or anything. And when I found out, it blew my mind. What, Robbie, do you see short-term and long-term right now for Palestine?
Well, short-term, I can see only trouble, more trouble. Because of the international support that Palestine is getting, and as we know, the recent vote for Palestine to be upgraded in the United Nations to an observer member state, the Israelis seem to be going really hard on the Palestinians, and it looks to me like they're trying to push the Palestinians into a reaction.
Yeah.
But the Palestinians start toward intifada, then Israel will be able to say to the world, look, there you go, they're the terrorists, they're the ones that are causing all the trouble, not us. But if we look at recent, the attack on Gaza last November, Operation Pillar of Smoke.
Yeah.
The Israelis attacked and went berserk again. The ceasefire that was brought in through mediation with the Egyptians has been drawn by the Israelis over 100 points. Several people have been killed. More than 100 have been injured. And all that has come back from Gaza is one mortar and one rocket in the period from November to now. And Israel will keep saying that they are the victims, that they are the ones who are being terrorized by the Palestinians. Yet, Jordan, that period of time under this ceasefire, they've broken that ceasefire so many times, and you're not going to find anything in the mass media. You're not going to find anything about that on CNN or NBC or even BBC in England. But they will report if a rocket goes from Gaza and hits Israel, which generally speaking they never do any damage or very rarely hit people, kill people or injure people. It'll be all over all these news stations. Yet they will not report when the Israelis shoot dead innocent people, people who are trying to farm on their land. And a lot of the time in Gaza, the farmers are trying to farm their land, their livelihood. The Israeli snipers pick them off.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, almost every day we know, because we follow and we talk to people, that there's some type of an attack. But as I understand it, and I don't have TVs anymore because I didn't like the lies, but as I understand it, the only time that Americans on TV would see something would be if there was some lame little rocket fired from Gaza and it landed in the Israeli portion of their land, and then there's a big deal about the terrorists. But they don't talk about this daily thing. Like you're saying, they shoot the farmers, they shoot the fishermen. They I know when Blaine was talking before about when he was reading some letters from kids, they talked about their school, and it had been this was the third remodel. I mean, it had been bombed out twice. And you know, if these drones are so smart and all this, of course they know that's a school, you know? Well, and they target it, though.
They know what everything is in Gaza. Yeah. They've mapped it so many times from the skies. They photographed every single building.
Yes.
They even know which buildings are United Nations buildings, and that didn't stop them from hitting the United Nations buildings.
Yeah, yeah. That and they, well, because the UN, somebody called it useless nations. It is run pretty much by the U.S. I mean, the U.S. can veto some things. I mean, I was so happy when so many countries voted to recognize Palestine, and you know, the U.S. couldn't bully them into not. I mean, they only bullied the you. But
they did try to bully countries into not.
Yeah. I mean, that was why there were 40 countries that didn't vote at all. They just weren't there. But you know, 138 voted yes. You know, but
well, there's another thing as well. I mean, like Rachel Carly is an American citizen, and the American government
did nothing.
Yet over it.
No.
And I mean, like, we could go back to I have a couple of friends on Facebook who were on the USS Liberty.
Yes.
Which was attacked by the Israelis in 1967.
Yep.
And they are still trying, after all these years, to get justice. And the American government is not going to give them the justice.
No.
And the reason for that is simply down to, you have to look at who funds all government election campaigns. And it is all the Israeli Jewish lobby in America.
Yes, yes. I mean, and that's absolutely horrible, because every year the survivors that are still alive now get together from the
Justice
Liberty. And, yes, they're still trying. They just want recognition. They want it admitted that Israel did this.
And did it deliberately to try to
get
the Americans to come in on the side of Israel against Egypt.
Yeah.
And that was a war that, another myth is that five Arab nations attacked Israel, which is a complete and utter lie. I don't know if you know of Michael Peled.
Yes.
The general.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, his father was a general in the army. And his book, which I would encourage people to get and read, it's called The General's Son, which goes into detail of all the going on just before that Six-Day War and how it was Israel that started, not the Egyptians, not any Arab nations. Israel started. And it was a war that was about grabbing land, which they did. They did the Golan Heights, more of the West Bank, and they are continuing to take land. That's their thing. They're taking land non-stop.
They're still building and building and building.
Yes.
But the USS Liberty, that was another false flag, and the United States just covered it up, because Israel really wanted to sink the Liberty and blame it on Egypt.
Yes, and it was only because of the bravery and the intelligence of the people on board the ship that they were able to, despite their communications mass being destroyed, they were able to react to the small one and get out to, I think it was the 5th Fleet, which was stationed not so far away.
But President Johnson had, stopped one of the ships that was going to the rescue and
exactly, and
turned it back. Because so he was, he was part of this. Because if that ship would have got there, there would have been probably a few lives saved. But it was hours and hours and hours later that they actually let a ship go, because they were hoping then that the Israelis would have finished off the Liberty. But it didn't happen that way. But there's so many false flags, and the U.S. government has been complacent. So, it's like you said, well, AIPAC and different organizations, we have so many dual citizens in Washington, D.C. that are Israeli. You know, when you're a dual citizen, it's very hard to have allegiance to both countries
exactly, when
it comes down to it.
But
Robbie, this is like you're saying that so in the short term, you see more of the same. But tell me, like down the road, what do you see?
Well, I see is happening is what's happening all over the internet, which is Israel is getting blasted left, right, and center by the truth. More people are learning about the conflict
mm-hmm.
through social media, that the people are moving away from their TVs. A lot of people, like you said, you don't have TV, or you don't watch TV anymore.
Right.
People are learning. The vote in the UN showed how much support there is for Palestine within the international community.
Yeah.
And it is a small handful of nations now that are still getting involved. And so Australia, you feel like you're going to vote against the Palestinians. People in our own party have told us, well, if you do that, we're going to break up the government. Yeah. But that's why the Australian government abstained. They didn't vote. But things are changing internationally. Information is getting out, thanks to the internet and the work done by so many people who are advocating for the Palestinians. The information is getting out, so more and more Israel is being isolated.
Yeah.
Okay,
that's a time frame, because I really haven't heard much of a time frame, but I think 10 years is very realistic, actually.
I think it will be shorter. I mean, like, you even look at the IPAC conference, the amount of demonstrations outside the IPAC conference.
Mm-hmm.
BDS is really, really working at this point. Really working this year and last year. There's been so many successes.
Yeah.
So Israel is being hit in the pocket thanks to BDS. The European Union now has come out and said that the settlements have to stop. That Israel can't keep building settlements. And the European Union are thinking of bringing in now where they're going to ban goods produced in the settlements from being sold within Europe. But that's something that should happen already, because it is again international law for Israel to be profiting from the settlements.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, so many of the laws, international laws, not even to mention moral laws, have been broken by the Zionists beyond a doubt. But I'm very hopeful. I like you. I credit social media, people waking up.
Credit also has to go to people who are not just advocating for Palestine, they're advocating for the big change in America. People like Chris Hedges, for instance. Chris Hedges now is a man that I have the utmost respect for. He's fighting the American system. He's fighting this new NDAA Act, National Defense Authorization Act.
Right.
Which is about trying to stop people speaking out.
It is.
What is wrong with America at the moment? But it's through people like Chris Hedges and Richard Falk, some of these people who are well experienced in the Middle East and understand everything about the Middle East, how it's run, how the US has installed puppet regimes around, how the Saudi government is very complicit in a lot of the trouble that's happening within the Middle East, because they are the biggest puppets in the Middle East. And there are people demonstrating against the Saudi government in Saudi Arabia. The American government is keeping very quiet about it, and there's nothing at all whatsoever in the media. Same with Bahrain. There are demonstrations. There's peaceful protesters being shot and killed in both these countries, and not a squeak about it in the media. Yet, if it happens in Syria or Libya or in any other country that's not pro-Western, you don't hear a thing about it.
Yeah. But that's why social media. I mean, we talk with people, whether we're writing or talking on Skype or on the phones, every day in other countries, and it there's a lot to be very hopeful about. So,
I think I've always seen the Mayan prophecy for 2012, which people have turned into being the end of the world, which is complete and utter truth.
Well, that was nonsense. It's for the change. It's a new world. Yeah.
Prophecy was a new beginning and a time of awakening.
Yeah.
And if you look at 2012, the amount of people who have come onto social network and sites who are awakening up, and I've met a lot of people who knew very little about the Israel-Palestine conflict through groups that I would post in it, and they will come and then ask me questions. You know, like, well, I never knew this was happening, I never knew that was happening, and you explain it to them, and then they will do some research themselves. You help them by giving them links.
Yeah.
And then they come on board. So every time I influence one person, that person is going to go off and influence another person.
Exactly. That's the way we build. Well, we build the truth net that way. But
yes.
Robbie, thank you so much. I'm so glad you came in. And what can I say? We actually have the 10-year Memorial Day is this Saturday. Yeah. So we'd just like everybody to remember what she died for, and, you know, the fact that we can and are making a big difference.
Yeah, and that's what we represent the majority of people around the world.
Okay, thank you so much, Robbie.
Okay, it was a little breaky up a little bit, but pretty good. Sarit, I want to thank Robbie. Because he's very passionate about this.
He's great.
You know, he's going to be there one of these days. We're going to see Robbie in Gaza, and he may get to the West Bank. And like you said, this could be very dangerous because he's very outspoken.
Yeah, I worry for people going there for some reason.
Yeah. Well,
they seem to be more vicious lately.
Yeah, that's it. And we only have 3 minutes left, and we're having you back as soon as we can because there's much more you have to say. I wanted to get your opinion, though, right now on, you know, Robbie was saying within 10 years, and he thinks a lot sooner, there's going to be the break. What do you think about that? Have you thought about a time frame?
I think they should have a one-state solution.
Oh, me too. I mean, I'm fighting for a one-state, yeah, beyond a doubt.
And just so I think they'll have to end up doing that in the end because.
Yeah. Do you think, though, that we'll see that within 10 years?
I really hope so. I hope we see something really good happen.
Yeah.
Miracles have happened before.
That's it. That's it. Miracles do happen. And we know a lot of us have felt this whole shift thing. And so things are really speeding up. So it may be, you know, just around the corner.
Yeah, I hope people wake up and realize that they can't keep.
Well, you are doing an excellent job along those lines because.
Well, I hope the Israelis realize they can't have a Jewish state and ethnic cleanse a state at the same time.
At the same time?
Yeah,
well.
That's just silly.
Sooner or later, that's got to hit home. But no, you're doing a marvelous job because. I mean, on the local front, you and your husband, Michael Custer, have done so much with Occupy, but you are always online, and like you say, I mean, within the Israeli groups, because you speak the language, and posting there, you're on so many Palestinian groups. I just want to thank you, because you're
thank you.
Marvelous.
Yeah.
Our friend in London, Eliane, said to make sure that I passed on her warmest regards to you because she really admires you as I do.
She's a sweetheart.
Yeah. See, we have friends around the world who are doing this and being supportive. So it's one of those things we can't lose. It's just a question of how soon are we going to win. And in a way, we've already won because we have these people with us.
Even if we prevent a few deaths, we have done something good.
Exactly. But now we've got to go, Sarit. I hope you'll come back on. We'll talk very soon about getting you back on, okay?
Anytime.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Just we're going to just listen to the fire as we go. Now, I love fire. So
that's pretty.
like throw another log and it'll get a little more crackle on whether it's inside or outside. It's all good. That's what people talk out there. So have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Okay.
Take care.